Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Duggan, your host. We bring you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we also stream live at richarddugan.com, archiving these programs. The podcasts are at the radio shows page of richarddugan.com. We encourage you to go there and check it out. Listen to the guests. We link to our guests' website as well. We'll be giving you that information shortly so that you can continue your study, research, your growth. Hopefully you'll be inspired and encouraged and so forth. So we hope that you will do just that. Check out what we're doing here. 2018 is the year that we're in now. Once again, we have finished celebrating all the holidays. I missed out on the opportunity to travel. I have to say, last year when we took our week-long vacation up north to Nevada City and the surrounding areas, Yosemite, and went to the Bracebridge dinner at the Majestic in Yosemite Park. That's all I've been thinking about this past year, this past holiday season of 2017, is I just want to be on the road traveling and of course, not rushing anywhere. We're not rushing anywhere right now. We're rushing. We're taking our time moving forward here on the program to our special guest here on the program, who is the author of a lot of interesting concepts and ideas. We're going to be talking about the concepts that are contained within the cover of the book, The Tenth Avatar, A Quest for Answers. Dr. Kanchan Joshi, I want to welcome you to the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity and looking forward to the conversation.
I find it interesting that this particular concept, we were introduced to avatars, at least I was, obviously through, you know, the film by James Cameron. So I had an idea, and of course, with virtual reality and all these types of different things. Give us just a synopsis, if you will, of the general aspects of the novel itself, and then we're going to jump into more of the specifics.
Sure, that sounds good. So we started with the Avatar and James Cameron's movie. Let me just spend just a short time to address that. The way we understand Avatar in the Western culture especially is that it is related to some sort of gaming or a persona that we acquire when we are participating in some sort of video game or something like that. In the original word is in Sanskrit, and that refers to put it loosely, sort of a person who rises above the challenges that he has, and he guides the society. And then whenever the society has problems or is facing a crisis, somebody rises to the situation, guides the people, and then he becomes, he acquires the title of an avatar. So that's, loosely speaking, that's the concept. Now, getting back to the book. The book, Tenth Avatar, A Quest for Answers, is set in two periods. One is set in ancient India, and one is set in modern-day California. The book tries to address two ways of finding answers to our deeper questions. One is based on intuitive understanding of things and experiences, and that is the Eastern or the ancient Indian part. And then there is the scientific or logical or experimental, and then the Western sort of way of finding out the same answers. So the book, in that sense, goes on these two parallel tracks. And at one point, the two concepts or the two explorations intersect. And then it explores what it means for the person and the larger question is what it means for the society. So that is the basic layout of the book. The driving force for all this is always this question that we have inside us. Whatever we see in life, is that it or there is more to it? We always have this question. And then the book attempts to look at these questions from both sides. Now, talking about the book in these terms, it might sound that it's very philosophical or heavy, but it's not. It's a very fast-paced, action-based book. So even if you don't pay too much attention to the deeper questions, you will still enjoy it. But the undercurrent of the book is answering these questions, and it also has some hard science. So in the sense that it is technically it's science fiction, but it's a hard science. So it's just a little bit of an extension of the science that we already know.
So basically you're taking scientific fact and weaving it into this story.
That is exactly right. That's a great way to put it, because that's what I've been trying to do. So I took the basic concepts of physics and mathematics, as well as the, so for the modern part, as well as the stories and the myths that we have in India, and then weave them into this story. But I used my own imagination in terms of describing some of these events and extending the science. So I went up to a point that, okay, this is what, as of today, this is what we know about the physics and the mathematics. And then there is, if you extend it, and that is where the science fiction part comes, that if we extend it, then what will it lead us to?
Mm. Now, you made an interesting comment that the East and the West do seem to come to similar conclusions about these questions that we've been asking for, well, ever since man's been around. But they come at them from different perspectives. And I used to take the position that the East had it better because they didn't get bogged down in the material world. But someone explained to me that there is a complementary aspect to both Eastern and Western ways of coming to the same conclusion, and that because it will help those in the West to better maybe accept the answers that we come to, at least that we come to today, because tomorrow we're going to learn more and we're going to know more, hopefully, and maybe the answer we got yesterday, okay, that was good for yesterday, but we found more information, and so now we have to modify the answer, kind of thing. So is that a fair assessment, especially considering the fact that, man, I was born here and raised here in the West, so I'm more likely to accept the findings of a Western, shall we say, research and so forth, even though I have a great love and respect and affinity for Eastern religions and traditions and philosophies and so forth. And I understand the general concepts in that regard.
Exactly. I think you raised a few very important points. Broadly, let's just talk about the materialistic approach versus the more sort of what we understand as spiritual approach. So just to give you an example, let's just take an example of India. So the Indian civilization or the society has been around for thousands of years. And there was a point in history when in terms of GDP, the India's contribution to the GDP was much higher. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was, you can say that it was equivalent of what, you know, United States would be now. Mm-hmm. So there were the materialistic approach, and if you look into some of the studies or the fields of work that people have done. So, for example, there is a lot of exploration in the field of metallurgy. So there is a pole in India which is built out of iron, and it's just standing outside in the open, and it has not rusted for thousands of years. And there are so many other, you know, architecture and dance, music, food, in terms of weapons, politics, society, economics. So they have done what we call as materialistic approach or materialistic concerns. They had explored them in depth, and they had very structured societies, and there were all these things. Archaeologically also, there are excavation which go back to thousands of years, but they had as we understand things, we would imagine that they were living in Stone Age or something like that. But if you look at Harappa, Mohenjo-Daro, they have a sewer system, public sewer system. They have common baths. They have a square arrangement of streets. And they have all these advanced features. They had bathrooms in the home and all these things. So they definitely considered all these materialistic approaches or the materialistic concerns in depth. And they lived the life to the full, taking advantage of all these things. But there was always a portion of the population that also gave them the understanding of, okay, you can enjoy this, but there is more to life than this. And it was not just a concept. It was a living reality. So there were people. So in an ideal way, you're supposed to live through all these materialistic aspects. And then you should also explore the spiritual or the things that you can experience beyond just your body and your mind. So, and they were given tools and they were given guidance such that they can explore such things and ultimately go to that dimension also. So it was more than philosophy or concept. It was more a living reality that you can experience yourself given the tools. And ultimately, because what happens is that if you take the example of our current society that we live in the Western culture, in the United States, as well as in India. You know, India now is the fifth largest economy in the world. And what is happening is that as people become, they become more materially successful, that doesn't satisfy them. In fact, it creates more questions in their mind. So what happens is that, for example, we live here. So if you take example here, then in this, this is the richest country in the world. We have all the comforts. Even if technically you are poor, but you cannot die in this country without food, you will always, you're assured that you will have some sort of food, or, you know, there will be agencies that will help you with shelter and all these things. But even if you take the example of affluent communities, they are materially successful, but there is always this quest inside them. In fact, they have more questions. And that leads to, sometimes it takes, if they don't get the answer or if it takes a negative turn, then it can lead to psychological problems and violence and things like that. We spend a lot of money on medicines and all these things. So if material success was enough, then we would not have these problems. But I think the basic aspiration is always there inside all of us, that when we are looking for example, if you just want to, everybody wants to meet the basic necessities of life, food, shelter, taking care of their family. But once that is met, we want to explore more and experience more. And there's something that gives us that, okay, this is not enough. At the beginning, you just talked about you wanted to go to Nevada, mm-hmm. and travel and all these things. So what is that? It is an extension of you want to expand beyond what you can do or what your experiences are. So that driving force is always there. And what happened in the East was that they were given tools to explore that and to live a more sort of fuller life in that sense.
Mm. Well, I find it fascinating that just a short, very brief little background. I worked for a Christian radio station for 15 years. And the fascinating thing for me was that the questions that I had for the commentary that I was getting, the questions I was asking were rather, I guess the best way to put it, they were heretical, in that, I shouldn't be asking these questions, that the founding fathers of the faith have already dealt with this. Just read their writings. You'll be fine. But the answers didn't make any sense to me. They didn't make any logical sense to me. And so I continued to question. And I remember, you talk about these different methods. My metaphysical primer was Autobiography of a Yogi. And when you were talking just a moment ago about these different ways of seeking out these answers, the one thing that came to mind was the experience that he had when his guru slapped him on the chest, and he had basically total omnipresence, if you will, around. He could see 360 degrees in all directions. He was aware of everything. It was, as it was referred to in the book, it was a much better cinescope than what he saw in the movie theater, as far as an experience in that regard. And supposedly he got a few answers in that process. What I notice here in the West, and I was thinking about this as I was listening to our weather forecasts, you know that the last few years we've had that polar express or that polar vortex that comes down from the Arctic and just inundates the United States. It's done that like the last few years, where it just was sub-freezing temperatures in the continental United States. Unbelievable. Well, something that was explained to me, and I'd like to have you expound on this, because we want to talk not just about a lot of the answers, but the questions as well. But one of the things that was shared with me was that whatever's going on in the material world, on the outside of self, is nothing more than a reflection of what's going on the inside, in the inner world of whoever it is you're talking about, or could be a particular community, could be a complete civilization, a society like the United States or Africa or what have you. From your perspective, and in terms of seeking answers to try to understand the outer world, is that a fair analogy or assessment, that until we get a handle on our inner life, the outer life is going to continue to be perceived of, and we're going to continue to experience it in, I guess the best way to put it would be a much more chaotic, it's going to be a much more chaotic experience, and that we can actually change that external experience?
Yes. So let's look at it, the first point that you raised. For example, people asking questions and then trying to answer them, and the answers are not satisfying to you or to the listeners. I'll just give you one example. So I think what is happening here is there were, just like we talked about the concept of avatar, for example, there could be that the society was in trouble, they were on the wrong path, and somebody had this great experience. It might be, you know, what we call a son of God or prophet or avatar or whatever, you know, whatever, or God himself, whatever we want to call it, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Let's say this person had a tremendous experience, like what was described in the autobiography of a yogi, something similar he had. And then he wanted to, obviously, when you are at that point where you have experienced this, you want to help, you look at other people and they're struggling and you know the answer. And then you're filled with so much compassion that you want to help them. So that is what you go and try to help them and try to guide them on the same path so that they also experience this and they are free from their misery as well. Just like you achieve that state. Now, what happens over time is that there will be some people who will follow these methods and they will actually experience it. But once that person is physically gone, whoever had that experience is physically gone, more likely what happens is that people just remember talking about the experience and the after effects of those experience. So one of the after effects could be that some miracle happened, you know, somebody was able to convert water to wine or something like that. And then maybe he laid down some principles that, okay, these are the things that you follow. But if you take the experience out of it and then you just follow the instructions or the sort of the side effects of that experience, then you are kind of missing the big picture. So that is what happens, and that's why these things are not satisfying, because you have not had that experience. You are just hearing about the experience. For example, again, going back to your trip to Nevada, let's say, okay, you can go to Nevada, but I will describe you in detail how Las Vegas is and how all the rocks are and everything. But that will not be satisfying to you. You want to actually go and experience it. So I think that's the distinction. And that's why it comes to the tools that we need for exploration and having this experience yourself. Let me just briefly give you one small example of what happened just 2 days ago. On the day of Christmas, I was doing, you know, my daily small practices that I do. And at that time, when I was doing it, just for a moment, I felt this overwhelming presence of like love and compassion, you know. And out of nowhere, I had not thought about it. I was not, you know, watching anything or reading anything. But I just felt as if Christ is sort of there, or his presence or something like that. You know, it was just a very intense experience, but it only, unfortunately, it only lasted for a moment. So if instead of reading books or anything, if you have this experience, I think that is more valuable. And once you have that experience, then all the books and everything, it becomes natural. You know, then you don't have to be told that love this person and do this and don't do that. It just comes naturally to you when you have such a intense experience. And again, this was just a very simple experience for me. But imagine if somebody had that kind of like a really intense and for a long period of time had that experience, then it would change them, and then it would lead to all these revelations and you know, guidance for society and all that stuff. But I think the main point that I'm saying is that we should look for those experiences rather than talking about the experience, because that is what you are seeking. Now, coming back to the question of inner versus outer, is the outer world a reflection of what is happening inside? So I think, let's take the word yoga. Mm-hmm. So yoga means oneness or joining or union in some way. So the idea that inside and outside is different is, to a certain extent, it doesn't make sense, because what happens is, for example, you just stand in the sun, and all the energy that you get on this planet is from the sun. So even inside your body, whatever energy you are generating, it is because of the food and then the air that you breathe, and you know, the combustion happens and then you get energy. So all the energy that you have, it comes from the sun. So how can you and the sun be separate entities? You're all interconnected. So it's all interconnected, but for the purpose of survival, we need to make that distinction. So to keep this body intact and everything, we need to say that, okay, this is outside, and then you get inputs for all the outside things from your five senses, and that enables you to function in this society and, you know, first of all, protect your life and be alive. And then it helps you do your, you know, job, take care of your children and whatever you consider as your normal life. So it enables you to do that. But we should not get caught up on this and forget that we are part of, it's a continuous phase. You know, we have this little bubble that we have created for taking care of some aspects of our life. But what generally happens is that we just get so caught up in that bubble that we forget that this is all a continuous phase and there is no real distinction. And obviously, when one dies, the body goes back to the elements. At that time, you realize that you were thinking about all these things. This is me, this is me. But obviously, that's not the case. It has gone to where it came from. And so there is this, I think the whole idea behind yoga, or many of the, you know, I have not studied, or I have not, I'm not an expert in any of the religions or anything like that, but I feel that the whole idea behind that was to just sort of be conscious of that boundary and not take what is within the boundary and take it too seriously, and then forget that you are part of this, you know, big picture, and it's a continuum, and you're constantly here because of everything around you. So it's easy for a developed society such as ours, with all our computers and GPS and all the technological advances that we have, to think that we are sort of a closed system, and we are not part of anything else, and we get too busy with whatever goes on in our lives. But we get reminders that we are part of the whole system, we are not isolated, and whatever happens inside, outside, it's all connected. And, you know, of course, there is the concept of, or it's not a concept, there's the, you know, there are some laws in nature. One of the laws is that what you do, what we call, what is sort of misunderstood sometimes as karma, that if you do some action, then you will get some reaction, and that is how it is. So if you do something in the physical world, then you will get some effects of it, and that's how it works. But I think the main idea is to realize that this is all continuous, and this distinction is only for the purpose of our survival, but it's not a real distinction in that sense.
We're talking with Dr. Kanchan Joshi. He's the author of 10th Avatar, A Quest for Answers. The website is kajoshi, that's kajoshi.com. We would like you to stay right where you are. We're going to come back with more here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Dr. Kanchan Joshi. He is the author of the book 10th Avatar, and we encourage you to pick up a copy of it, and also go to kajoshi, that's kajoshi.com. What is it about all of this that has fascinated you for so many years? There's one word in particular that I was introduced to, and it wasn't really a new word, it was just the whole realm was introduced to me back in 2013 by a good friend of mine, and we produced several programs in 2014 dealing with mythology. And we spent a year doing programs regarding the various aspects thereof. And one of the conclusions that I came to was that, and I'll have you expound on this as far as your intrigue of this, is that in all mythology, there is some fact, almost along the same lines as what you have done within your book, The 10th Avatar, where you've incorporated actual factual scientific information and so forth into this wonderful narrative. So tell me about the intrigue, the interest, the passion that you have for these questions, and then, of course, the quest for answers.
So what we call mythology, growing up in India, it was described to me as history, that it actually happened and this is what happened. That's how I grew up. And then what we were taught in school was sort of contradictory to that. For example, we were told that this story, for example, in the book, we talk about the story of Ram and Hanuman. This history happened, they say, around 10,000 years ago, roughly speaking. And then we go back to school, and then we are told that at that time, a few thousand years ago, we were in Stone Age, people were living in caves. And then Galileo was the first one who found out that Earth is round, and planets do not circle around the Earth, but Earth circles around the Sun. And then you go back to this book, which was written thousands of years ago, and it has detailed astronomical observations. For example, this person, Ram, was born in this part of India. At that point of time, these were the planetary configurations. This is where the moon was. This is where all the visible planets were. This is what's happening from this point on. Then, after at the age of, let's say, 17, he reached this point. From this point, these are the configurations. This is how this looked, and it is geographically accurate and internally consistent. Now, if you go down further south, then he went to this point, and then from there, he could see this comet. This star was rising in this direction, this constellation, this was going on. I mean, for a rational mind, how can you have all this knowledge And at the same time, then you are saying that this was the first time when we found out that Earth is round. It doesn't make any sense. So obviously, there has to be there's something that we are missing. So that was the driving force. That, and once you have that realization, it's it doesn't let you sit quietly. That okay, either this is all made up, or it is just a description of what actually happened. So what, which way is it? So that was one driving force. And then the other one was, I have a 7-year-old son. And then he also listens to all these stories, and he asks me the same thing, that is this real or is it just a story? So that also, and children's questions are the most difficult to answer. You have to write a book to answer their question.
Yeah.
So that also sort of motivated me to explore this in more details. And then once I started reading about it and finding out about it, then I found several sources. So, for example, people have studied all these astronomical observations. And there was a person who actually worked with NASA. They built a software that went back thousands of years. And they put in these astronomical observations that are mentioned in these books. And they were able to come up with dates. And then they shortlisted it based on all the, for example, you know, for this particular configuration, maybe there are 100 time periods when this particular planetary configuration happened. But then if you combine that with something else that happened from this point, then you narrow it down. And then they were able to come up with only one or two dates for these events. So that is the sort of the astronomical observations. But then if you go to the geography on the land, all these things are always there, that you, he was born here, then he went to this place. Now you will go to this place. You have all these caves. You have all the things that are described exactly the way they are mentioned in the book. Then you go to the southern part, and then you have these features. And now they're even saying that there was this bridge that was built in the Indian Ocean from the southern tip of India to Sri Lanka. And there was satellite imagery that shows that there is such a bridge, which appears to be man-made. So if all this was happening and they had all this technology and they had these advancements, then how come we are told that this was the first time, you know, a few hundred years ago was the first time we heard about all these things? So I think history has various layers, and particularly if you think about thousands of years, it gets all muddled up and different people describe it different ways. But that was the motivation behind it. And okay, that's so, you know, there was this quest for getting to the bottom of this, or at least trying to understand as much as I can based on whatever literature and everything is available. So it gives you a perspective. It changes the way you look at things. And it's also fun to explore these things from the past and learn from it. But I think there is the more satisfying thing is that you come to know that people always had this quest and always had these problems. What we are facing is nothing new. There are always these conflicts. There are always materialistic things and spiritual things, and people always went about these things. So we think that we are facing these questions and these situations for the first time, but that doesn't seem to be the case. The surroundings or the environment might be changing a little bit. For example, now we have cars, maybe there they had chariots and things like that, but the questions and the driving force was the same. And one thing about truth is that, so for example, if you take science, if I say that if we combine, let's say, let's take a simple example of chemistry. Let's say we say that if we mix this and this, and we heat it to this temperature under these conditions, you will get this result. So that is empirically verified. Now, if you do this anywhere else at any time, any point in time, you will get the same results. So the same thing applies to this quest for answers also, that the nature of the question is the same. And then the tools that you can use to answer those questions, if they are true, then they should be the same. And so it gives us satisfaction that, okay, these people also had these questions. They came up with these tools. They use these tools and they work for them. So we should, we can also explore those tools, experience those things, and maybe we'll get the same answers. So it works both ways. And that's why in the book, I've combined the historical, for example, detailed descriptions of several battle arrangements, how the troops need to be arranged. Mm. If the enemy has this arrangement, then you make this arrangement. And sophisticated weapons are described, flying objects are described, radiation, effects of radiation and how they can be used, those are described. So I have incorporated those elements along with the spiritual aspects of it. The quest is always there. Okay, these are all means to an end, but what is the end? And you know, so there it is explored from experiencer point of view. And then in the modern part of the book, it is experienced from physics or mathematics point of view. But if it is truth, then it is consistent across both, and that is both time periods, and that is what we see in the book also.
You know, the biggest challenge, however, that I am finding as we converse about this, and I do agree with you from the perspective as you share it about the truth and about asking questions and about using science and so forth. However, in the United States right now, and it seems to be permeating the rest of the globe from the technological standpoint, people are now calling into question the so-called facts, the so-called science. Obviously, the probably for 2017, the most popular overused word in the English language to denigrate and to demean and to undermine the ability of those of us who are true seekers to express and share where we're coming from is the word fake. That if they disagree with what you are saying, the conclusion you are coming to, it's fake. It's fake science, it's fake news, it's fake information, it's fake this, that, and the other thing. And it seems to me like someone is going to have to step outside of that paradigm in order to begin the quest to find the answers that maybe deep down inside they've been looking for. Because if you stay in that mode of total cynicism and skepticism, you know, and it's great to always question authority. That's a wonderful thing, because that's what I did back in my 20s and 30s with the religious community and asking the questions that I did. But I didn't accuse them of giving me fake information. I took it that those were the answers that they chose to give for whatever the reason, whatever the agenda was, if that's all they had, or if they were trying to achieve a particular end game, a particular goal or result. How do you face that kind of, and I'm going to say it is a penetrable wall. How do you face that? How do you deal with that? How do you get through that? Because the science is the science. And yes, today it is what it is, but tomorrow we'll find something new that will maybe further explain things rather than say, oh, well, yesterday it was fake. Today it's real. Can you share with us your thoughts on that?
Sure. I think the important big issue that you raised is the question of leadership. And in the book, I explored this question a little bit. Just like our parents have influence on us, or they shape our experience in certain ways. Similarly, a powerful person, he or she might be powerful because of wealth or political power or military power or business. They shape our experiences in certain ways. Ideally, you would like this person to be to have risen above themselves and have a bigger, they should, ideally they should have, they are leaders because they're supposed to see things that we cannot see. And they're supposed to guide us and take us in the right direction. Now, that is clearly always not the case. Sometimes we get leaders who may not be as accomplished in these matters as they are in some other, and that's how they acquired power, and they are our leaders. So these situations will always be there. But I think the most important point is that, for example, we cannot create peace in a community if the individuals by themselves are agitated or angry or they don't have the answers that they're seeking. So as far as an individual is concerned, I think the most important thing that you can do is enhance your abilities and enhance you learn these techniques or learn these tools, and then you experience it yourself, and then you go up to a level where you can deal with different situations without being too affected by it. And then once you rise to that level, then whatever you do, it will acquire a very different meaning and impact. So not all of us can be presidents or, not all of us can have power as we understand it. We cannot be, not everybody can be senators or, you know, we cannot be judges or whatever the centers of power be. We cannot always be like that. But what we can do is enhance ourselves and make ourselves in such a way that we have answered or we have explored all of our questions. And we are at a point where, as individuals, we are we have completed our quest, or at least we have made a significant progress, and then we are ready to contribute. And that is a much powerful and positive way of looking at things. Just like what we say, you know, charity begins at home. Similarly, this begins at home. You first be peaceful and you answer your own questions, you explore these things, then it will permeate from you and it will spread to others also. And that is how, if you can imagine that if you have thousands of such people, so millions of such people who are at that stage, then it will change and then the change will come. And mm-hmm. that is what, again, going back to the book, I paint a picture in in the last part of the book where it explores this possibility. What will happen if a lot of people reach that stage and how it will change society. Mm-hmm. And eventually the leaders will also change. And it will overall, it will lead to the kind of place that we all want to live in.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as targeting, saying bad things about other people who differ from you, I think there is always the driving force is always power. You want to control the conversation. You want to have the power to yourself. That is sort of understood. But as far as what we can do about it, and I think it's the individuals who can enhance themselves. And then, because no matter what, let's say you have a great person who is leading you, and he's very respectful, he's very polite, and he's doing all these things, but he can only change your experiences as far as the physical and those dimensions of life. But these other dimensions, which you always have the quest for, you are sort of responsible for that. And once you do that, then all these outside things will also fall in place.
There is a gentleman I've interviewed many times over the last 10, 12, 15 years, Greg Braden, and he wrote a book called The Healing Power of Belief, I think is what it was called. Anyway, we discussed this whole thing, and I said, and he basically made the statement that we will evolve to a place where we will no longer believe, we will know. We will make that step, that transition, that it won't require belief. We're just going to know the things that we've believed for so long, or we'll find out that what we've believed wasn't true, and then we'll know the truth. I've often sort of joked a little bit when I hear about particular prominent religious figures who pass on. And I remember one in particular who was really very vitriolic, very caustic in his commentaries to other peoples that he didn't cotton to. And when he passed on, I said, well, at least now he knows the truth, you know, at least as far as my perspective is that when you go into the next world, it all comes flooding in and it's like, oh, I was a jerk in that life. But, you know, we come into this world hopefully understanding. I'm curious what your understanding is of that accessible information that's talked about in many different philosophies, the Akashic records or being able to connect to the divine and get answers. And some would say that that's rather subjective. Because it's just, you know, how can I say that Kanchan received a message from on high about whatever the subject is and challenge that? That's your experience. Now, that's me from hopefully a fairly open-minded perspective saying, hey, if that's what you experienced, I'm not going to challenge it. Who am I to challenge your experience? As opposed to many of the philosophical institutions saying, I'm sorry, but there's nowhere in the book that it says you can have that experience, so it didn't happen, and totally dismissing it. What are your thoughts on, and of course, this goes from the more scientific to the spiritual aspects of, shall we say, going from belief to knowing. Can you share with us your perspectives on that?
Definitely. So, I think belief, again, you know, if you go back to what we're discussing earlier, that let's say there was some sort of a leader or somebody who experienced something. And, you know, the thing about experience is that once you have that experience, it doesn't matter if anybody believes you or not. It doesn't matter to you at all. For example, the experience that I just talked about, it's my experience. I know it happened. It doesn't matter if my wife believes in it or not, or my neighbor believes in it or not. It, you know, it's totally. But the effects of that. So, for example, because of such experience, if I'm filled with love and compassion, and earlier I used to get mad at, let's say, I used to fight with my neighbor or with my colleagues or my relatives or something. But now I have this realization. And so that's the difference between intellectually understanding something and experiencing it. If I had that realization, if I had really had that experience, then it will change me. Then I will just not be able to fight with someone just because they think something or they believe something or they look a particular way or they eat something or they dress a particular way or for whatever reason. It just won't make sense to me. And that's the power of experience. But if I just understand it intellectually, I will try to teach myself, okay, I see that person. I want to fight or I want to argue or I want to say bad things about them, but I will control. I will just be polite. That is the difference where you are just being polite in the society versus where the thought is irrelevant. And if you are at that stage, then if people believe in your experience or not, that is up to them. You don't care about it. But the effects of that, they will certainly see, and that will lead to a better life for you as well as for others. Now, as far as the other question that you asked about accessing information and all these things, again, in the book, I talk about it in a very interesting way that I don't want to give away too much that I've talked in the book. Hopefully, your readers will read it and enjoy it. But the point is that we are able to find answers to our questions the best way when we have figured out all these questions, all these answers, when we have it figured out, then we can go about answering or exploring these questions with full energy, full zeal, without any fear of failure, and with a great purpose and understanding where, you know, it just brings a different perspective to the problem. And again, in the book, I talk about it, how it brings this perspective. For example, there can be certain laws of physics or certain scientific questions that we are not able to understand. But if we keep our, if we address these problems with this experience, then it will definitely completely change the way we look at it. And it will help us explore these questions in a totally different and a much efficient way. So that's the main thing. And then once you are at that stage, you will still be able to, for example, let's say you're trying, you know, let me just give you an example of real life example of a physicist. For example, you know, when we think about physicists, first name that comes to mind is Einstein. Or there were other physicists who, for example, let's say there is a particular state of carbon that is essential to describe everything that we see around us. But based on the current theories, it is impossible that state of carbon can exist. But somebody had an intuition that, yes, there is that state of carbon. He devised the mathematics that explained it. But then science needs scientific data and experiments. So he convinced, he used to work at Caltech. He convinced them that, okay, we need to do this. And they did that experiment. And lo and behold, whatever he predicted, exactly the experimental data exactly validated. So there could be such situations where you could solve the problems in physics, mathematics, in your material life, everything, once you have this understanding. And then you can devise experimental data that that supports it. So it's a little bit, science can move both ways. It can be sort of bottom up or top down, in the sense that you could come up with, for example, Einstein also, he came up with a lot of his mind-bending ideas first, and then devised the mathematics and some of the physical proofs we are finding right now. For example, the collision of the two black holes leading to this gravity wave that we can detect. So, you know, once we have this great understanding and once we answer these questions within us, then it will help us solve all the problems in physics, mathematics, or what have you, in any aspects from a totally different point of view. And it will also, and then at that point, it will not be profit driven. It will not be driven by some negativity that you want to beat someone or, you know, for any of the other reasons. It will just be because you are expressing your creativity. And I think that's a great way to do things. And if we practice some of these tools, then it will lead us to that path. And that is exactly what happens in the book. And I think if you read the book, then you will enjoy it and you will sort of get that picture.
I find it interesting that, and I've always been fascinated by this. First of all, I want to compliment you or your publisher, whoever is responsible for the font size. For me, it's always important because growing up with a visual impairment and, of course, having a lens implant not long ago, it makes it very easy to read, for one. Number two, that a thing that I really love about books like this, these kinds of adventures, these science fiction, if you will, of a sort, is that I get to play producer, director, and all of that, and I see the thing playing out in my mind. I had that experience with one of Dan Brown's books when my wife and I were listening to it on a trip to Santa Barbara, and I remember when the movie came out, and my jaw dropped open as I'm watching the opening scenes, and I see the main character, And he looks I didn't cast Tom Hanks in the role, mind you, but the character looked exactly like in my movie. I'm curious as to whether or not there is any type of screen adaptation for this as of yet. Has anybody approached you on that? Because it just seems to me that it would be ripe for that, especially in this day and age. What a great message to be putting out there in such an intriguing way and a fun way, too, I think.
An ancient prince and an accomplished yogi who realized the secrets of life and superhuman powers. A brilliant scientist who struggled to solve mysteries of the universe with mathematics alone. Separated by thousands of years in time. Work together to make humans realize the true nature of the world, and in the process reveal the 10th Avatar. By author Dr. Kanchan Joshi. Welcome to the world where astonishing magic of the ancient times cutting-edge research in physics and mathematics meet to explore spirituality and the next evolutionary step. The 10th Avatar, a quest for answers. Coming soon.
Exactly. I think that's a great point that you made. If you go to YouTube and put 10th Avatar, a quest, you will see a great short video that we have made.
Yes, it's amazing. I thought it was a trailer.
Yeah, exactly. It's a book trailer. And it's less than 2 minutes. You should please go and check it out. It has gotten rave reviews. Everybody who watches it likes it. So please check it out.
Yeah, I'd like a longer version.
Yeah, exactly. But, Richard, at this point, this is all labor of love for me. I'm, as you can imagine, you can see the trailer we had to hire. There is a lot of graphics that has went into it, a lot of animation, as well as real people. So we have to hire models. And then, all the makeup and the costume and lights and all that. So all that at this point is a labor of love. So I'm paying for everything out of my pocket. Mm. And to get the word out there and put the book as well as this great idea out there so that people read it. They enjoy it in a fun way, as I mentioned. All we are talking about are very heavy topics. But the book itself, if you just read it, it will satisfy you intellectually. It will also prompt you to seek answers. But if you're not at that stage, if you just want to enjoy the book, I think it's a very fast-paced adventure book. And you will like the science in it. You will like the action in it. And you will enjoy it at that level also. And I certainly think that this will make a wonderful movie. And if any of your listeners are interested, or they know somebody who would be interested, I'm definitely open. Kajoshi, kajoshi.com is my website. And I'm on Facebook, Author Kanchan, Instagram, Author Kanchan Joshi. So if you just look all those up, there are several ways you can get in touch with me, and I will be more than happy to explore this possibility, because like it or not many people like to read books. And that's why I try to make it in such a way that it's very fast-paced. It's easy to read. The fonts and everything are such that you know, the book doesn't sound very bulky. It's only less than 250 pages. Some of my friends who never read the book, they were able to finish it over a weekend, mm-hmm. In 2-3 days, because once they started reading it, they could not stop.
Well, so that says an awful lot about your writing abilities. There's no question about it.
And exactly. And this is my debut book. You know, I'm trained as a scientist. I've never written before.
Yeah.
But the inspiration was so strong that I had to do something about it. Mm-hmm. I could not ignore it anymore. Fortunately, I got it reviewed with professional sources such as Kirkus and independent reviewers, as well as feedback from readers. And it seemed that the professional as well as the regular readers like it. And we are marketing this in India also. So on the Facebook page, there we have 26,000 likes and followers. And we are trying to do some marketing in the United States also. So I think so far the videos, I have put out some videos also talking about the book, the plot and the characters in the book. And they have received thousands of 5,000, 10,000 views and a great response. Mm-hmm. So far things are looking good. But some of my friends and family, they saw my passion, they saw the book, they saw the trailer, they came together and they are supporting me with the marketing. Some of them work for Disney, so you know they will try to talk to them about making some sort of movie out of this or something. But we live near Los Angeles. If any of your listeners have any ideas about it, then I would definitely be glad to work with them, because ultimately the book reaches a certain audience, but the movies or videos, they reach a much larger audience. And if we can convey these great ideas that will benefit everybody through these mediums, then I think that will be a wonderful use of this medium. Because as we know, all these YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they can be used for good as well as bad things. If you go on some of these, you are bombarded with all. Sometimes you are bombarded with negativity and vitriol. So if we can change the tone a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Put something positive out there, then that will be great.
Give us that website one more time.
The website is kajoshi.com. And on Facebook, it's Author Kanchan. And Twitter is Author Kanchan Joshi. And Instagram also, Author Kanchan Joshi. So, and on Facebook also, there is a page for author. Let me just quickly check here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's Author Kanchan Joshi. So if you go to that page, then you will see thousands of likes. And I think at this point we have almost 26,000 followers and likes. So Author Kanchan Joshi on Facebook, kajoshi.com website, and then Twitter and those also, I think it's just some sort of variation of Author Kanchan or Author Kanchan Joshi. Mm-hmm. So if you just look that up, then there are. So yeah, Author Kanchan is on Twitter, and Instagram is also Author Kanchan.
Right.
And Facebook is Author Kanchan Joshi.
Well, we will link to the kajoshi.com so that people can get started there. And I know all those other links will be available as well. And we encourage people to investigate. Let me ask you, because I know we're fast approaching the end of our time here, but because you used this sort of the concept in our conversation earlier, sort of like, because I've always wondered this myself. I struggle with the past, present, future concept. Past being where we came from. We came from the One. This is very simplified as far as my understanding. We came from the One. The present is we're in this dualistic reality, and that where we're going to into the future is we're going back to the One. And my one question I have been asking over and over and over again, and I've gotten some very good answers that have not satisfied me, only because I don't think that's a great answer, but you know, it's like, how are you going to fight it? What in the world is the end game here? What is it that we are trying to accomplish or achieve? through this process of manifesting into material existence and then creating more material stuff. And then we born, we live, we die. And maybe we reincarnate over and over and over again. Is there an end game to this? Is there a final conclusion, or does this just go on and on and on? And we just, in order to create more interest, we have to create more trauma and drama and so forth in the material world. What's your perspective on my my very human query as to stop this ride? I want to get off.
Exactly. I think that's exactly the driving force behind writing the book. That no matter what we have, as I said, let's say, let's take an example of somebody from maybe a developing country. So maybe he doesn't have his basic needs met. He doesn't have enough food. He doesn't have a roof over his head. He doesn't have, he cannot meet his basic needs. Let's say the economy does well, as it is doing now, and he's able to meet his basic needs. But then what happens? Then he thinks, for example, let's just take an example of my example or some other people. When I was in school, I thought, okay, I do this. In India, it's very competitive. So if I do well in this exam, then I get into this great college and then life is set. Okay, I go into the college that I see other students are the same way. Now, okay, if I just finish this, I get a great job, or if I go to United States, everything will be set. Okay, so you find a job, you take exams, you come to United States. Then here, okay, you're doing PhD. If I publish this paper, if I work with this professor, it will be great. Okay, you do that. Then, okay, if I find this job, so it continues. Mm-hmm. Once I get married, maybe things will settle down. Once I have kids, once I have my house, this, that, it continues. But it never ends. Because, and it is good that it doesn't end, because it tells you that this is not what you're after. You have all this, but still you're not satisfied. You want more. So that means that you want something that is beyond your physical capability. And that is where the exploration starts. That, okay, I have whatever I could with my physical, even if I become the president or whatever, if I have all the power in the world, will that be enough? Probably not. And that's exactly the quest, that what is it that I'm seeking? And that you, no matter what intellectual answers anybody gives you, even if, just for the sake of argument, I'm saying this, it's a God comes and tells you, and this is a very interesting thing. So it has happened. So for example, there is a very good book in India. For example, the autobiography of a yogi is based on the book called Gita. And in that, the person who is talking, Krishna, he's supposed to be the God. And his friend is Arjun, who is asking all the questions. So there you have a situation where, for all intents and purposes, you can assume that God is in front of you, but this guy cannot stop asking questions. And that is exactly the way it is, because no matter how many answers you get from whoever, you will not be satisfied, because you have to experience it. And that begins by actually, and I think there are two very important things if you want to experience these things. And I'm not an accomplished yogi or anything like that by any means. So the whole idea for the book, it is just intended to be a road sign, and there is something going on here. You should go and check it out. That's all the book is. But if it heightens your intensity, for example, you mentioned that you just want this to stop and get off. So if your intensity is very high, then, and this burning question is there, that it doesn't let you sleep, it doesn't let you do anything, then the answers will come to you. Then you will find a guide, what in Indian culture or in yogic culture, it's called a guru. So guru means one who destroys darkness. So you will find the answers, and you will go on that path if the intensity is strong within you. But the most important thing is not to try to answer your questions or not to BS yourself or just try to quell your curiosity by making stuff up. That's the most important thing, that you want to really, you should be honest to yourself that, okay, this is the answer that I have. That is satisfy me. Is this what I'm seeking? If the answer is no, then you should continue. You should not stop and say that, okay, this is what it is and I'll stop here and I'll just wait for something to happen to me or something like that. No. If you are not satisfied, then you owe to yourself that you explore this and see where it takes you. And I'm sure you will find the answers and it will take you on the right path. And then once you have that understanding, then all these questions about what will happen to the world, is it just materialistic, did we start from this and where will we end, these answers will come to you naturally. You will have that understanding naturally and you will be filled with so much joy and compassion that these answers, then these answers will make sense to you. But if at this point, if you try to understand these things or try to grasp them intellectually, then they will never satisfy you. So for example, again, if you just explore the book purely from a scientific point of view, you will not get these answers. You will get stuck at one point. For example, let me just give you an example of these paired photons. So for example, there are these two paired entities that can be separated by a distance. But if something happens to this, it instantaneously happens to this other paired entity. How is that possible? They're separated by distance and everything, but whatever happens to this, instantaneously it happens to this. So if you look at anything, you will not be able to answer things just from physics or everything. You will reach some sort of dead end. And that is where these other aspects come into play. And once you have the understanding of those aspects beyond the physical, then all this will satisfy you and it will make much more sense to you. And then you will be able to answer those questions that you have. You will realize the answers to those questions by yourself. And even if you are addressing a physics or mathematics problem, you will be able to answer those questions in that language. And if you just have questions about your materialistic life or where we are going, all these things, those answers will come to you, but they have to come to you once you are at that stage. Yeah. If just somebody just gives it to you where you are, it will not get you anywhere. You will not be satisfied by it. So I think the most important point is to follow the quest and be honest to yourself and not settle down till you realize the answers for yourself.
It sounds to me like I need to have a Siddhartha moment at the Bodhi tree, realizing that when I stop searching for enlightenment, I'll find it. That's a fair analogy, I think. It's very, very interesting. Before we let you go, Doctor, I want to thank you, first of all, for taking so much time and sharing with us here on the program. And first of all, let me extend to you an invitation that should you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, not just about the about 10th Avatar, but also just about all of these different aspects of the complementary aspects of spirituality and science. When we were talking earlier about this, one of the thoughts that came to my mind was the Catholic Church's treatment of was it Galileo who discovered that the Earth was not the center of the universe.
That's right. Yeah.
And of course they had their own agenda because they wanted humanity to be that important, that significant. And of course, if we're not the center of the universe, well, there goes our significance. I still think we're pretty doggone significant. But yeah, we'd love to have you in studio. And so if you do find yourself out here, we'd love to talk to you further.
Exactly. And just a quick correction. The website is kajoshi.com. And the book is available on amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com. If you just put 10th Avatar, A Quest for Answers. And then I certainly agree with you. Thank you so much for the invitation. I would definitely love to meet you and discuss more with you and your listeners. As far as we are concerned, you know, you don't have to believe anything. You don't have to listen to anybody. Just look around you. There are more stars in the observable universe than there are grains of sand on Earth. So, I mean, tomorrow, if, you know, everything like Earth vanishes, I don't think anybody would notice. So that is the reality.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have to be real. You know, we just have to keep your eyes open. And I mean, there's so much vastness. Some of the objects are moving away from us at a speed greater than the speed of light. That means they will never be observable to us. So given the scope and dimension of all these things, I think it just makes sense that we are just a part of it, and we should just take that into consideration when we go about our activities. But at the same time, being in this state of being a human, we have this unique opportunity to explore these things and understand it and really get the answer. Because I'm sure bears or tigers or any of the other creatures, they don't have this kind of understanding to think about all these things. At least most of them, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this unique opportunity to understand these things. And if you go into this, explore the yoga deeper, you will understand that the way our body is and everything, it is, it gives us the best opportunity to explore this and really go beyond our physical and mental limitations. So this is a great chance. If you miss this, then who knows when we'll get it back.
Exactly. Once again, thank you. Before we let you go, I have three final questions that I like to ask my guests. And again, I encourage folks to pick up 10th Avatar, A Quest for Answers, Dr. Kanchan Joshi. And we again thank you. First question is, who is Kanchan Joshi?
That is a very deep question. And usually, we can, when we talk about someone, we talk about, you know, I have a PhD in chemical engineering, I'm a scientist, I grew up in India, where I was exposed to all this mythology and history. I've lived in the United States for more than 16 years. So these are the things that I have done. But what you really are, these are acquired things. These are my actions. But this is not me. So the deeper question is, who am I? And that is exactly what the exploration is about. And again, I don't want to give an intellectual answer to this. But what I would say is, I am beyond this body and my actions. That is a good starting point. And then we should explore more and see what we experience.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
So two things. One is at a personal level, and one is at a larger for the society. At a personal level, eventually I want to be at a state where I can devote more time to some of these yearnings that I have. Sometimes I feel a very strong calling and a very strong motivation, you know, very strong force driving me towards something. But given that I have family responsibilities and other things, I cannot devote to it as much as I would like to. So I would like to reach a stage where family responsibilities are easily taken care of for me, and I can devote full time to this exploration and really go about it the way I want to, at a personal level. And as a result of that, I paint a picture of how the society would look like, and that is what I call the next evolutionary step in the book. Of course, it's a big, big step, and hopefully we get there, but this is just the beginning. And as I said, if you want peace in the world, if you want everybody to be happy and, you know, everything satisfied, we have to start with ourselves. So we have to get to that stage. And then once we are at that stage, naturally, it will become our nature to give it to everybody around us. And that is how, and then if there are millions of such people, then generally the society will also become like that. So the idea behind writing the book is to serve as a signpost saying that if you have these questions, then don't silence them, explore them. There are answers and you will definitely get those answers.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose, if the things that I just mentioned, if they really happen to me, that will help me realize my life's purpose. So if I'm able to explore these things as much as I want to, an example comes to mind of Buddha. So he was raised as a sheltered prince. And then once he went out and saw an old man, a deceased man, and a dead man. And he realized that these things will happen to him also. And then he left everything. He left his comfortable life, his family, and he went on a quest. And then he almost starved himself to death trying to find these answers. And then eventually, at one point, he realized the answers. And then his purpose of life was served. You know, we are not, for example, I am not as motivated or as intense as him. But if I could reach that stage, as close to that stage as I could reach, I think that would be great. And for that, if these other things fall into place, then I can devote myself completely, because not everybody has the fortitude or that much motivation. And that was also one of the things that inspired me to write the book. When I saw such people who have given up everything, that their whole life, and all they are doing is serving others. And, you know, that means they have seen something that I don't know. And that is, if I could get to that stage, then that would be the purpose of my life.
Mm. Again, Dr. Kanchan Joshi, thank you so much for sharing with us your story and 10th Avatar, A Quest for Answers. Again, the website is kajoshi, kajoshi.com. We will be linked to it. We encourage you to, as I've said at the beginning of the program, we encourage you to continue your education, your quest, and go to the website and find out more. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.